This Morning, America's First News, starts right after this.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Manchin strikes again. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Friday, July 15. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
In a pivot, West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin says he won't support an economic package from fellow Democrats that raises taxes or includes climate measures.
Texas is suing the Biden administration over new guidance that says abortions must be provided in medical emergencies.
With a BA5 COVID variant gaining, the Los Angeles County Health Director says an indoor mask mandate could return.
And the sport that's finding new life at the high school level, the javelin.
Different states are actually adding the javelin throw as an event in track and field. So states that either had banned it years ago or never had it in their state track and field meets are including it now.
Rachel Bachman at the Wall Street Journal on the javelin soaring back at high school track and field meets. As Israel and Arab countries work more closely to counter Iran's ramped-up nuclear work, President Biden says the U.S. won't wait forever for Tehran to agree to revive the 2015 nuclear agreement. He spoke yesterday in Israel on the second day of a four-day trip to the Middle East.
We mean what we say. They have an opportunity to accept this agreement that's been laid down. If they don't, we made it absolutely clear. We will not. Let me say it again. We will not allow Iran to acquire a nuclear weapon.
Mr. Biden said he remains committed to diplomacy with Iran. In an interview with Israeli media this week, he said he would use force as a last resort to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon. Meanwhile, the U.S. has sought to encourage a deepening of regional alliances that could help contain Iran and allow Washington to focus on other regions, in particular China. Separately, Mr. Biden also did not commit to raising the murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi during an upcoming trip to Saudi Arabia. Plans by Democrats in Washington to pass legislation regarding climate change have taken a big hit. Fellow Democrat Joe Manchin, the pivotal senator from West Virginia, says he will not support a package that raises taxes or includes climate provisions. Instead, Mr. Manchin told Senate Majority Chuck Schumer that he'd only get behind a bill that includes provisions aimed at lowering the price of prescription drugs and a two-year extension of subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. This is a shift. For months, Mr. Manchin repeated that he would support a bill that raised taxes, reduced drug costs, gave support for energy production, and lowered the deficit. Here's Missouri Republican Congressman Jason Smith.
The last thing that Washington needs to be doing right now is to be spending hundreds of billions more dollars and putting over $1 trillion in taxes.
Democrats are aiming to use a special process called reconciliation, which allows legislation to advance with a simple majority rather than the 60 votes typically required in the Senate. Texas is suing the Biden administration over federal rules that require abortions be provided in medical emergencies to save the life of the mother, even in states with near-total bans. We get more from this morning's Dave Duncan.
In a statement, Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says the Biden administration seeks to transform every emergency room in the country into a walk-in abortion clinic. Earlier this week, the Biden administration sent a memo to state officials reminding them of an existing law called the Emergency Medical Treatment and Labor Act, which requires that all patients receive an appropriate medical screening, examination, and stabilizing treatment if necessary. The lawsuit challenges the Biden administration guideline on the grounds that it uses federal funds. Gordon?
Thank you, Dave. The complaint also argues that Health and Human Services should have subjected the guidance to a lengthy notice and comment process required of newly proposed rules from federal agencies. The Biden administration memo did not implement a new rule technically, but asserted that an existing law should be applied to abortions. Dell's Black Friday and July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. If you missed anything, be sure to check out a podcast of today's show. It's available every day on the This Morning with Gordon Deal app, plus Google, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. Democrats are banking on a roster of strong Senate candidates to help them retain the upper chamber amid a dismal political environment that increasingly favors Republicans. It's a story by Julia Manchester, national politics reporter at The Hill. Julia, start with the fundraising data.
We've seen a number of really eye-popping fundraising numbers from Democratic Senate candidates in particular. So, for example, incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock bringing in $17 million in the second quarter alone. John Fetterman, the lieutenant governor from Pennsylvania, who's running to be that state's U.S. senator, he brought in $11 million. And Congresswoman Val Demings from Florida, who's challenging Senator Marco Rubio, brought in $12 million. So, you know, they're making a lot of headlines with these huge fundraising hauls. I think it shows how much the Democratic Party apparatus is obviously behind them, and they point to grassroots strength. But Republicans say not so fast. First of all, a lot of Republican candidates have not released their numbers. And also they say, look, it doesn't matter as much, you know, how much you raise, but it matters, you know, how much you're spending.
For Democrats that are running for the Senate, are they going to distance themselves from President Biden due to his low approval numbers?
You know, I think you're already starting to see that, notably last week in Cleveland when President Biden spoke at a union event in that state in Ohio. We saw a number of prominent Democrats from Ohio standing alongside him, but noticeably absent was Congressman Tim Ryan, who is running for Senate in Ohio. And we know that gubernatorial candidate and Democrat Nan Whaley was also absent. So I think it shows, you know, they say it's a scheduling conflict, but I think it shows, you know, how Democrats are trying their best to distance themselves from the president. You know, John Fetterman, for example, is, you know, out with an op-ed today offering his own take on inflation and how he thinks that it can be solved through making things making products in America. A slightly different message than we've seen from the Biden administration, who, you know, has offered a similar solution, but they're pointing to a number of other factors as well.
We're speaking with Julia Manchester, national politics reporter at The Hill. Let's talk about the states that are key in November for both sides, Pennsylvania, Florida, and Georgia. What are those races shaping up like?
Yeah, so in Pennsylvania and Georgia in particular, I would say those are the swingiest of the three states. We know that Pennsylvania has decided presidential elections over the past couple of years. Once more of a reliably blue state, it has become much more swingy. And then, of course, in Georgia, we know that it used to be a reliably red state, but Democrats flipped it at the presidential and Senate level in 2020. And one of the Democrats that flipped it at the Senate level, Raphael Warnock, is up for reelection this year. And we know that he's, facing Herschel Walker, who is considered a vulnerable candidate, but most polls actually show them pretty neck and neck. So it's going to be a close race. In Florida, that's definitely a red-leaning state, definitely an uphill climb for Congresswoman Val Demings from the Orlando area. Florida has certainly gotten redder in the past couple of years. However, Val Demings is from a much bluer part of Florida, more Democratic majority part of Florida. But, Rubio has an incumbent's advantage, and, you know, he's in an environment which favors Republicans. However, I think Democrats point to the fact that Val Demings is clearly a good fundraiser, and she fits the profile of an ideal candidate. So in a year when Democrats are really pushing back on this, when Republicans are accusing Democrats of being weak on law and order, you know, Val Demings is former Orlando sheriff. So she's, got that law and order background. She has a national profile when she served as an impeachment manager in President Trump's impeachment trial in the Senate. And, of course, she brings diversity to the table. She is a black woman, and that was something that was, that she's touted quite a bit, and Democrats have pointed to her saying she brings that diversity to the table.
Thanks, Julia. That is Julia Manchester, national politics reporter at The Hill. 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning, here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Biden warned the U.S. wouldn't wait forever for Iran to agree to revive the 2015 nuclear deal.
We've laid out for the people, for the leadership of Iran, what we're willing to accept in order to get back in the JCPOA. We're waiting for the response.
Iran has emerged as a central theme of Biden's ongoing trip to the Middle East. Biden says he remains committed to diplomacy with Iran. In an interview with Israeli media this week, the president said he would use force as a last resort to prevent Iran from acquiring a nuclear weapon.
Number two.
The Secret Service deleted text messages from January 5th and 6th, 2021, after an internal watchdog requested them as part of a review of the department's handling of last year's Capitol riot. A letter sent Wednesday by the Department of Homeland Security Office of Inspector General to the heads of the House and Senate Homeland Security Committee said the messages were deleted as part of a device replacement program. Despite the Inspector General requesting such communications, the Secret Service rejected any suggestion of wrongdoing.
Number three.
The House voted 329 to 101 to pass a massive annual defense policy bill that would boost the total national security budget for fiscal 2023 to $850.3 billion, tens of billions of dollars more than President Biden requested. House lawmakers cited high inflation, Russia's invasion of Ukraine, and threats posed by China to justify adding $37 billion to the budget proposed by Biden. The bipartisan measure would give troops a 4.6% pay raise. It's a once-in-a-lifetime discovery. A previously unknown self-portrait of Vincent van Gogh has been detected behind another of the artist's paintings. The National Galleries of Scotland says the self-portrait was found on the back of van Gogh's head of a peasant woman when experts at the gallery took an X-ray of the canvas ahead of an upcoming exhibition. The work is believed to have been hidden for over a century, covered by layers of glue and cardboard when it was framed early in the 20th century. Van Gogh was known for turning canvases around and painting on the other side to save money.
So we sort of knew this, but never found this self-portrait on.
Yeah, and a lot of things. He's hidden a lot of things over the years. He'd be a rich man now, you know, if he's... were able to sell these himself.
And self-taught, but didn't have a marketing or business degree, I guess. Thanks, Jen.
Innovation, resilience, agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Thanks for being with us. A quiet movement is soaring across the nation and into states from Florida to Arizona. The javelin throw is making a comeback in high school track and field. Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal, noticed the trend. Rachel, what's happening?
Well, what's happening is that different states are actually adding the javelin throw as an event in track and field. So states that either had banned it years ago or never had it in their state track and field meets are including it now.
The decline in javelin in high schools has been so pronounced that the U.S. is not even competitive in the Olympics, right?
That's right. It's been about half a century since a U.S. man or woman won an Olympic medal in the javelin. And it's many countries have won javelin medals since the last time the U.S. did. So it's not terribly competitive. But the numbers in the U.S. are starting to tick up. By my survey, about 22 states now offer the javelin at their high school state championship track meets.
So what's fueling this sudden resurgence in javelin?
I think it's a combination of things. One, it's longtime coaches who, miss the event and want to help bring it back. They talk about how it's a very versatile event. There's, you know, kids of all sizes and shapes can excel at it, and they think that's a great opportunity to add to their meets. And I think there's some perspective about injury rates. You know, there certainly have been some injuries in the javelin, but the rate of injuries for instance, track and field as a whole is far lower than the injury rate in, for instance, cheerleading or football. So I think there's a growing perspective about, hey, if we're careful about this, we think we can do this very safely.
We're speaking with Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. It's almost a kind of thing where it looks more dangerous than it is. But as you mentioned, not as dangerous as football, cheerleading, lacrosse, or a sport like that.
Yeah, it's all a matter of perspective. And the people I spoke with who've added it take this responsibility very seriously. They have very elaborate measures to make sure nobody's in the path of the javelin when there's a practice or a meet going on. They want this to continue. They want us to keep growing. And so they're taking a lot of responsibility. And they want the teenagers doing this to take responsibility too.
As a javelin coach that you quoted in your story says, all it takes is one incident to shut the whole thing down.
That's true. And there certainly have been a small number of very high profile incidents that people remember because they tend to be very gruesome. So that certainly is top of people's minds when they think about this. But, you know, there often are injuries, you know, serious injuries, for instance, in football that we don't even hear about, or cheerleading for that matter, because they're more common. It's just that javelin injuries tend to be very memorable and tend to be highlighted in the media. So that's why they've kind of lingered in memory.
Thanks, Rachel. Rachel Bachman, sports reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Want to eat healthier, but every supplement you've ever tried seems like the better it is for you, the worse it tastes? Then you have to try AG1 from Athletic Greens. I started taking AG1 because I wanted more energy and better gut health. What I didn't expect, the taste is better than any supplement I've ever had. I drink it, like it says, before anything else when I wake up. I guzzle those 8 to 10 ounces before my coffee and start my day knowing I've already gotten the recommended daily intake of all the good fruits and veggies. There's definitely a mental boost knowing you've started the day off on the right foot. I tackle the day now with more confidence and energy. AG1, by the way, is not only lifestyle friendly, it's cheaper than getting all the different supplements yourself. Try AG1. I love this product. To make it easy, Athletic Greens is going to give you a free 1-year supply of immune-supporting vitamin D and 5 free travel packs with your first purchase. All you have to do is visit athleticgreens.com/Gordon. Again, that's athleticgreens.com/Gordon to take ownership over your health and pick up the ultimate daily nutritional insurance. athleticgreens.com/Gordon.
We are America's First News, This Morning with Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday, July 15. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koshenka, some of our top stories and headlines. West Virginia Senator Joe Manchin says he won't support a proposal from fellow Democrats that includes raising taxes. Texas sues the Biden administration over new guidance requiring abortions in medical emergencies. Slowest economic growth in China in 2 years. Profits tumbled at J.P. Morgan, but the big bank sees few signs of recession so far. Ivana Trump, ex-wife of the former president, has died at 73. And the world-class sprinters who get challenged to foot races by ordinary folks. That story in about 20 minutes. School districts across the country are increasingly using summer school this year to address the mental health crisis among children, with districts partnering with community-based organizations to help deal with the lasting impact the COVID-19 pandemic is having on students. Details from Ben Chapman, education reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Ben, take us through it.
Basically, what's happening is that schools are blending mental health supports into traditional classes that are held during the summer. And these are voluntary programs that mix academics with socio-emotional learning that are sort of a departure from your traditional mandated summer school that we think of when we think of summer school.
How do they work? How do these programs work?
They're full-day programs held in school buildings or sometimes off-site. and they're operated by school staff in partnership with outside vendors, such as camp counselors, community organizations. You know, in New York City, they split the day 50-50. So it's like 4 hours of academic instruction in the morning, followed by 4 hours of camp-style stuff in the afternoon. When I visited a school in Brooklyn, they were making tie-dye T-shirts in the afternoon.
Okay, so I think of mental health approaches, and I might think like group therapy sessions or something. Is nothing like that is happening?
That's exactly what's happening in the settings of a classroom or in the setting of a camp-style activity, such as making tie-dye T-shirts. So when I visited the school in Brooklyn, they were having a civics lesson, and then blended into the civics lesson was a period where they broke into groups of five and then created lists of rules for how to behave in a classroom. And the rules were things like learn from each other, be kind, stuff that, you know, helps the kids adjust to being in a classroom again after so much time off.
We're speaking with Ben Chapman, education reporter at the Wall Street Journal. His story is called Schools Are Tackling Mental Health This Summer. Is there a cost to families?
These programs are typically offered free of charge to families. Schools saw a massive infusion of money from the federal government, unlike any disbursement of money to the public school system ever before in history, over the past couple of years amid the pandemic as part of the American Rescue Plan. And so that money is helping to pay for these programs. So they're typically offered for free. So you have working parents and you got free summer camp for kids, basically, that, you know, mixes in some academics and mental health support. So they are popular with families.
You referenced New York City and what they're doing. You also got a sample from Oklahoma City. What's happening there?
That's right. In Oklahoma City, I mentioned that program because Oklahoma has put $21 million at this project, are creating a lot of seats in these programs. And interestingly, they're holding them off-site school campuses. So, for example, there was a program in Oklahoma City that was being held at a Boys and Girls Community Center in a housing project. And it was administered by the Department of Education in partnership with the Boys and Girls Club. And this is an attempt to sort of bring the programs, make it into where people live and make it ultra convenient for families to participate.
Thanks, Ben. Ben Chapman, education reporter at the Wall Street Journal. Dell's Black Friday in July sale is here. Power productivity with a tech refresh, now with up to 45% off top-rated laptops like the XPS, along with our special deals on business desktops with Intel Core processors. Get big savings on the latest servers, storage, monitors, and more with free shipping and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Upgrade today by calling 877-ASK-DELL. That's 877-ASK-DELL. Glad you could spend some time with us. Welcome into Friday. A grove of giant sequoias in California's Yosemite National Park not only has escaped harm from a nearby wildfire this week, but also might benefit from it. Here to explain is this morning's Jim Chesko.
Could a wildfire at Yosemite National Park end up being something of a positive for a nearby grove of giant sequoias there? Maybe. Let's talk about it with the Wall Street Journal's Jim Carlton. Jim, first off, where exactly is this wildfire that broke out July 7th?
So it broke out July 7th near it's called the Mariposa Grove of Giant Sequoias. It's on the near the southern entrance of Yosemite National Park. So people who have been to Wawona, there's the famous Wawona Lodge. It's the oldest building in the park, and it's a beautiful area, but most noted for the giant sequoias, and some of which are as old as the time of Jesus Christ.
Yeah, you said some of these sequoias are thousands of years old?
Right, exactly. The giant sequoias grow only in California in the Sierra Nevadas, and the oldest are there's one that's 3,200 years old, if you can believe that. The one in this particular grove, there's about 500 giant sequoias, and they're, really, really old. One of the oldest, I think, is over the 2,000 years old. And the problem is, just like a lot of forests in the western U.S., there's a kind of a huge overgrowth of forest around these groves, and so they've been under threat in recent years from fire.
There aren't all that many sequoias around the U.S., as you noted, so I'm guessing these giant trees are pretty popular with tourists?
It's a prime tourist attraction. In fact, it was one of the first things that was actually designated for protection back in the 1800s was this because of this grove, the Mariposa Grove. And there's maybe 70 or 80,000 giant sequoias left in the world. They're all in California. They're all in these groves. There's three groves in Yosemite National Park. Mariposa is the biggest. Sequoia National Park has a lot more, and they've had a number of fires as well there.
So explain again how the wildfire may actually end up being a positive for the sequoias, how they'll be better protected.
Well, what the sequoias have been evolved to, they actually benefit from moderate intensity fire. In fact, they can only procreate really after the fires heat the seedlings and start new trees. However, for millennia, it's been moderate fires, never as high as the tops of the trees, usually smaller fires that burn out it's called the understory, the brush and smaller trees. The problem is that over the last 100 years, the U.S. Forest Service got into a policy of not, allowing fires to happen in the western U.S., and that resulted in a gigantic, overgrowth of forest. A lot of the sequoias have had a threat of Douglas fir, ponderosa, much more flammable trees, erupting in giant firestorms near them. So around this grove and some others, the National Park Service, among other agencies, they've been clearing trees away from the groves. And in this case, this fire, the Washburn fire, cleared a whole area they were planning to clear anyway. So it's kind of like they got a freebie from Mother Nature.
Yeah, you wrote in your article that Yosemite has been something of a pioneer in the use of prescribed fires. How so?
Well, Yosemite's been doing this since the 1960s, and they'll go in the kind of the off season and when it's less flammable. Maybe right before the first snows or right in the spring, they'll burn out a few hundred acres here, a few hundred acres there, and they try to do kind of what nature should have been doing all along, is have natural fires. So they've done probably the best in the country at this. And the results show when they do get a big fire in Yosemite, usually it doesn't turn into a mega fire like we've seen last year, the Dixie Fire in Northern California, which took out 1 million acres. The Caldor, which headed for Tahoe last year and is about over 200,000 acres. But that hasn't happened in Yosemite as much because they've stayed on top of these prescribed fires, including around the Mariposa Grove.
Anything else we should add, Jim?
The fire is still burning, and so the conditions, it's so dry. With climate change, any fire is still a threat. But the one thing they can say is that these giant sequoias are most likely going to do just fine.
Thanks, Jim. That is Wall Street Journal reporter Jim Carlton with this morning's Jim Chesko.
Innovation. Resilience. Agility. It's how Michigan businesses work together and continue to build the future. Our expertise, talented workforce, and collaborative environment are making a difference now and shaping the future. Join us and make your mark where it matters. Visit michiganbusiness.org/radio to put your plans in motion. That's michiganbusiness.org/radio.
Glad you're with us. If you missed anything, be sure to check out a podcast of today's show. It's available every day on the This Morning with Gordon Deal app. You can also find it on Google, Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. 9 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
President Biden will meet Palestinian leaders in the occupied West Bank today before he flies to a controversial summit in Saudi Arabia. His meeting with Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas is likely to be strained after ties hit a low under the Trump administration. Yesterday, Biden met with Israeli Prime Minister Yair Lapid to discuss Iran's nuclear ambitions.
Words will not stop them, Mr. President. Diplomacy will not stop them. The only thing that will stop Iran is knowing that if they continue to develop their nuclear program, the free world will use force.
Later today, Biden will travel to Saudi Arabia to meet Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman.
Number two.
Democratic Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, the pivotal vote in Democrats' efforts to pass a bill aimed at fighting climate change, told Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer he wouldn't support an economic package that raises taxes or includes climate provisions. Instead, Manchin told Schumer he would only support a bill that includes provisions aimed at lowering the price of prescription drugs and a two-year extension of the Affordable Care Act subsidies. Manchin's position in the negotiation represents a shift from a view he's held for much of the year. For months, he repeated he would support a bill that raised taxes, reduced drug costs, provided support for energy production, and narrowed the deficit.
Number three.
Disgraced South Carolina lawyer Alex Murdaugh has been charged with murder in the deaths of his wife Maggie and son Paul. Maggie and Paul Murdaugh were found fatally shot on June 7, 2021, near the dog kennels on the family's hunting estate. Murdaugh's lawyers deny guilt. Ivana Trump, Donald Trump's first wife and the mother of his three oldest children, has died at the age of 73. The cause of death is unknown. A former model who was born in Czechoslovakia, Ivana married Trump in 1977 and held key positions in his businesses during their 15-year marriage. The couple's children are Donald Jr., Ivanka, and Eric. Things are so bad at Heathrow Airport in London right now that Delta has flown a plane filled only with luggage, no passengers, to the U.S. to help reduce a baggage pileup. The aircraft full of 1,000 suitcases was flown as a, quote, creative solution to move delayed check bags. Heathrow, plagued by congestion and flight-related mishaps this summer, recently called on airlines to stop selling tickets on flights to Heathrow.
Yeah, it's like you got to make the cut at Heathrow these days.
Yes.
To get on a flight.
Horrible situation.
Wow. Thank you, Jen.
How would you love a chance to save some money on car insurance? GEICO can help. Switch today and see all the ways you could save with great rates and discounts. It's easy. Simply go to geico.com to get a rate quote and get started seeing how much you could save.
Thanks for being with us. Would you ever challenge a world-class sprinter to a foot race? Apparently, it's not uncommon. The Wall Street Journal says for the many sprinters gathering for the start of today's track and field world championships in Eugene, Oregon, the competition is a respite from this unusual phenomenon of random schlubs approaching and challenging world-class sprinters to a race. Top sprinters say it is a remarkably common occurrence. Christian Coleman of Atlanta is the reigning champ in the men's 100 meters. He sometimes gets challenged while he's shopping at the mall. Karsten Warholm of Norway, the world record holder in the 400-meter hurdles, works out at an indoor public facility in Oslo. Mr. Warholm recalled a training session once when a man, not dressed in running clothes, asked him to race. Warholm had an upcoming race, so he said, why not get some work in? Of course, he smoked him. Then the man insisted he had a bad start and wanted to race again. Warholm says he'll race someone if he's in the right mood, but he says usually after he wins, people are not themselves because it's a different kind of speed than they're used to. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.